Hey, welcome once again to Around the Table with South County Outreach, where we take you on a deep journey into the heart of our organization's mission to combat poverty and uplift our community with the man who knows how to do both. Laval Brewer, welcome, sir.
Oh, we're back at it again.
How did you learn to combat poverty and uplift the community at the same time? That's like the job walking and chewing gum at the same time here.
Who said I did that?
The guy you've got, he does both of this today.
He does. I'm so excited. We've had this podcast conversation in passing many times. So we're just rehashing stuff we've talked about collectively together. Bill, you bring me so much joy when we're together. I just love that we're going to talk to you today. But I got to do the intro. Let's do the intro. Hi, I'm Laval Brewer, and this podcast is not about showcasing our work at South County Outreach. It's about inviting you, our listeners, to join us on our mission. By offering a sneak peek into the values that shape our poverty prevention efforts, we hope to inspire you to become more involved in creating positive change in our community. And who better to talk about creating positive change in our community than my friend Bill Bracken. Bill, how are you?
Do I really bring you joy? You never told me that before.
Oh, you bring me joy, bro.
Yeah. I feel touched right now.
You should, and that's not, you know me, I'm gonna tell you the truth. I'm either not gonna say something about you, or I'm gonna tell you, you bring me joy. I will tell you one, not to diminish this conversation, but there's another person who brings me joy, Steve Kim from Project Kinship. Yeah. Whenever I'm next to him, I feel this joyful energy that kind of pulls off.
That's last week. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are others. So those of you who think that you don't bring me joy, you bring me joy. But Bill and I have had a long and short relationship. We've been next to each other for many years and then became partners in this work about 4 years ago when the pandemic was raging and we were trying to think about how do we go about making sure that people have food on the table. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, but we've been in the same circles. I'm following him as it relates to awards and accolades. I was in his office a couple of weeks ago, and I recognize that his awards table is vastly bigger than mine.
I don't know about that, but has it been 4 years, really?
That's 4 years.
Wow, we got old in the last 4 years.
You know what? I'm very tired. We're actually going to talk about that a little bit as we get there. But hey, for those of you, Bill, those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about what Bracken's Kitchen does and why it's so important to our community.
Absolutely. Our mission statement is through food rescue, culinary training, and our community feeding programs. We're committed to rescuing, repurposing, and restoring both food and lives. And what that means in simple terms is we get to go to work in the kitchen every day doing what we love to do most, cook tasty, nutritious meals. And we use that by rescuing lots of food that would otherwise go to waste, which is a huge travesty in this country. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we now have a fully reimagined culinary training program. We're about ready to send our latest class 4 out into the world on externship, and we're fully recruiting for class number 5, which will start next month. So it's a whole lot of fun when we now see those students here learning and growing. So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, we're going to get back into that at the end because I'm so intrigued by that. And we're, like I said, I'm following your footsteps. We're going to do something similar. Obviously, we're not going to teach people how to cook. That's not our goal. Although I can use a chef's knife at my barbecue, I do not know how to use it for mass food.
I'll be waiting for the invitation to try your barbecue.
We will not be doing that.
You know what it's like to be a chef, especially with my background, and you never get invited anybody because no one wants to cook for the chef.
Yeah, I would. Now that you said that, I'm going to have to do that. Okay, I'm a brush up on my seasoning. Hey, let's start off. We talk about all kinds of things, and why are we here? Why are we talking? I think in particular, we're talking about food today. And we both do something around food recovery and then repurposing. In some cases, you repurpose and we create an environment to where food is a right and you feel like you're shopping as a normal human being, not as someone who gets nothing against my partners who do food pantry work that they hand it out. But the whole goal for our food issue is how do we create dignity, respect, and normality into someone's life as it relates to this thing that we take for granted, the grocery store.
Absolutely.
So you talked about recovering pounds and pounds and pounds of food. We do the exact same thing. What do you think about that? Like, I know the answer, but when you think about recovering food in order for us to make sure that our citizens have the food they need that is tasty, delicious, and everything else, what are your back thoughts in there?
Man, I could get going all day long, but I think most Americans don't realize the massive amount of food that we waste. And it really is, it's criminal. I just told the story yesterday with a group of people around Christmas time this last year. All of a sudden, everybody is calling us with ham. We got ham. Yep. I'm sure you experienced that.
Turkey for us.
But this particular thing was Costco Kirkland brand ham, and nothing wrong with them. They're a great company, great organization. But beautiful honey-baked spiral-cut ham that I don't know how many millions of pounds was sent out to sell in Costco during the holidays, and realized that there's a code error on the label, and they couldn't sell it.
Oh.
And it's either throw it away or find a home for it. And in the economics of business, I understand why that decision is made, to try to get a sticker or something and recall hundreds of thousands of hams and put a sticker on there with the right code on it. It's impossible. So just get rid of it and they start over. But when you think about that millions of pounds of ham that would go in the trash can if it wasn't for organizations like yours and what we do, it's just sad. And then I'm a country boy from Kansas. I love my meat and potatoes, but we took the life of an animal to feed people and to just throw it away.
Yeah.
There's just something that's not right with that. That's one simple example of food waste. People just think about food waste in terms of this is almost spoiled or it's rotten. Mm-hmm. Food doesn't become waste until we throw it away. Mm-hmm. And how do we as a country find better ways to ensure that food doesn't end up in the trash can or in the landfill to feed the people that need to be fed? Because God knows there's a lot of hungry people in this country.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to take that a little further from our side. So Bill gets these pallets of meat or vegetables or
whatever it is.
Whatever it is. I remember one day we got the biggest bag of rice I'd ever seen in my life. It was a huge bag of rice.
Yeah.
It looked like a sack, one of those sacks that you'd have to have two or three people hold on. And I looked at that, and it was in the pantry, and I was like, who?
We'll take that.
I'm sure someone might take it, but like, how do they process through that and all that rice? And it was bigger than the basket in a sense. Yeah. Like, how are we going to make that happen? And I'm like, okay, where do we get the rice from? Found out where we got the rice from. And there's some rules about what you can do when you get food and how you redo it. And it's like, okay, we got it from this location. Okay, then we can send it over to Bracken's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And we load it up into the truck with as we were going to pick up food from you. And we'll talk about that in a second. And I knew that it would have a good home.
Yeah.
Right? I knew that rice would be taken care of. But your point is really well taken. And on the other side, we have a strawberry field right behind our office, right, in Irvine. If you're traveling down the 5 and the 405, you'll see these strawberry fields on the right.
Of course.
I've been passing that strawberry field now for 4 years, almost every day. So I know the patterns in that strawberry field really well. And there are days when I'm getting up on that strawberry field and I can smell the strawberries because they're ripe.
Yep.
And I know at that point in time that those are the strawberries that are going to stay in that field.
Yeah.
They're never going to come out of that field. Yeah. They're going to be there, and then eventually that bulldozer and that plow is going to plow those strawberries right under, and they're going to prepare for the next plant. And I stop and go,
how do we get that out of the field?
How do we get that out of that field?
Yeah.
How do we get that out of the field? And it just reminded me of how difficult it is. So some people will say, why doesn't that farmer pick those strawberries and package them up and take them to South County Outreach around the corner? Because that requires labor that he has to pay for. And it requires packaging that he has to pay for. And it requires shipping and processing that he has to pay for. And that is not something he's going to pay for.
Yep.
Right? And you take that and you add ripe avocados or ripe peaches or whatever that is around the country that can't be harvested, and the business owner doesn't want to do that. They do. They're going to throw it away. They're going to give it to the pigs and the animals, and they might find a way to get that shipped over to us. It's an incredible travesty that the United States has this much food and continually cannot figure out how to get it to its hungry citizens.
Well, the irony for me growing up in a small farm community in Kansas was, those are the best strawberries.
They were.
My mother used to pick up the apples from the ground. We had an apple tree in our yard. We had everything in our yard. I was a city boy growing up in farm country because I lived in town. Mm. But you name the vegetable, we probably had it growing in our yard. And Mom would always grip apples off the ground because they were so ripe that they fell from the tree, and they make the best apple pie or fried apples or things like that. And here I am always looking up on the tree for the perfect apple.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom's picking the ones up off the ground. And as a chef today, I think about that. What a unique dichotomy that we live in. You go to the grocery store, you look for the perfect produce.
Right.
There's as a kid, you grow up and you pick an apple off the tree and you see there's a bad spot in it. You're riding down the road on your bicycle, you eat an apple as a kid, and you bite that bad spot and spit it out and you eat the rest of the apple. You don't waste the apple. But here, if it's not perfect, it'll never make it on the grocery shelf. You know, when you think about those farmers, those things, it's just about caring. It is economics. There's no doubt about it. We have one of the biggest farmers in the country. They supply broccoli at almost every Costco in America. If you ever bought organic broccoli florets and you cut the florets off the broccoli, you have this beautiful stem that's left. And they used to truck it right back to their fields and plow it under. And he's like, I got to do something about this. And he reached out to us, and it'll cost him as much money to send it to us. He'd even cut it into broccoli slaw for us. But the same amount of money to send it to us, or even less, and taking it back to a field in Salinas or someplace. So we get pallets of broccoli stems from him all the time. And that is a staple in every meal we make, because you know, you cut up into small dice, no one will even know it's there, bless you. And it's so much nutrition in broccoli stems. It's full of nutrition and vitamins and nutrients. So it's just a matter of someone caring. I'm not saying that farmer at the strawberry field doesn't carry, but the smaller the farmer, the harder it is to make a profit, to make a living. The bigger boys can afford to do it more.
Yeah. For those of you who do not know what Bracken's Kitchen does in a simple way, you can't get it all on this podcast, because there's more than I know that he does for our community. And it's not just food for homeless families. It's food for all kinds of people. But I'm going to talk about our partnership.
Absolutely.
When I first got to South County Outreach back in June of 2020, I think we talked probably 3 months afterwards about, is it possible for us to put your food into our pantry? And what would it take for us to make that happen? And you just looked at me and said, well, I've always wanted to make it happen down here. Let's do it. And next thing I knew, we were picking up food from you. So we have our own Bracken's refrigerator. That's how deep this partnership is. And whenever we do tours at the pantry, we're walking through. We have three key points we make. And one of those key points we make is that's the Bracken's Kitchen is an organization that creates healthy, nutritious meals out of recovered food. And because of that, those nutritious meals become the democratizing our grocery industry. So in other words, if I get to go to a grocery store, and I'm like, I just need to pick up something right this minute for lunch, or I need to get a meal for dinner that is already prepared and I know that it has good ingredients in it. And I could do that at my local, you name the grocery store.
Yeah.
Why can't a family who doesn't have enough money to feed themselves or doesn't have enough money to feed themselves throughout the entire month, why can't they enjoy that same privilege? And your meals make that possible. The soups, the single meals, the family meals that a family can put in their basket when they leave us, take home and heat up and be ready to go. It brings me so much joy to know that when we say to someone, because oftentimes we hear people say, this is good food, they should be happy to have it.
Yeah.
And I just go, it's not loving thy neighbor when you think about that. Why did you do that? Why are you letting us have your food?
I got to tell you, when you called me up after that, I was like, yes, because we've been talking to South County for a long time. And I think that was a time that America was still, and we still are today, four or five years later, getting arms around rescued food.
Yeah.
Because the food bank model, which is what this country's hunger relief program has been built on, doesn't keep up with the food waste issues of today. Here in Orange County, we're blessed to have Second Harvest Food Bank, Orange County Food Bank, and we're blessed to be in this area where there's so much farm produce and freshness. But you're in the middle of Kansas in the wintertime. Food bank is fresh produce is scarce. So we really are blessed to be with some local partners in the food banks that do work that's amazing and different than the others. But that's just here. That's not across the country. And dwelling on those families, you talk about it. Yeah, I remember starting this, and we have this stigma in this country about poverty. We think you got to work harder, you got to do this, you got to do that. And Martin Luther King Jr. once said it's a preposterous notion to expect a bootless man to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And I grew up with a dad who taught me to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I just got chills running through my back and fight and work hard to get beyond the struggles you have. But I never understood the cycle of poverty until Bracken's Kitchen. You hear about it, but what does that mean? But to see a young kid out on a playground that I'm feeding some 8 years ago and realizing in 30 years that kid is still going to be there, the difference will be he's going to be a parent. It's his kids out there getting a free meal because they're stuck in this this cycle that no one knows anything about. And then you apply food to that, and you just mentioned yourself and in a hurry grab something at the grocery store. Yes, I'm a chef, but we're guilty of a lot of convenience foods. Trader Joe's meatloaves and a fully cooked chicken from Costco every now and then. We live busy lives. Mm-hmm. And that is no different for someone living in poverty. It's even more so because of the burden of just trying to get by. And you don't know what that person's home is like. Mm-hmm. You give them a turkey for Thanksgiving, they don't have a stove to cook it in.
Right.
Or an oven to put it in. And people can't fathom a home without an oven. But that's real. You know that. I know that. So there's, you know, here we are wasting food. And as a chef, when I knew that God was calling me to do this, all I know how to do is cook. So how do we cook something that's tasty and nutritious and easily reheatable? So it just morphed into this thing with rescued food that we can make some amazing meals from the tempura shrimp that I was talking to you about before we went live. And why not? Why just here's a box, go figure it out for yourself. That's not what we're called to do as humans, regardless of a person's faith. We share faith, but regardless of that, look around. Why not help your neighbor out if you can? Is it really he who dies with the most toys wins? Is that really what it's all about? Or is it he who helps the most people wins? What do you want to have on your gravestone someday? Here lies a guy who had a lot of fancy toys. Mm-hmm. For me, I'd like if there's going to be something on my gravestone, here lies a man who cared and helped people. Right. That to me, I think, is what life is all about. What I've got is food. Cooking skills. That's what God has given me to help people. Why not?
Yeah. So you said a couple of things, but I'm gonna touch on a few of them. One, I was just with middle school principal just yesterday and his counselor. We were talking about food insecurity on school campuses. In other words, and this is in Laguna Niguel. Mm. And even he said something that made me pause and go, okay, got that for food. Yeah. And he said, we got these apartments around us that are two-bedroom apartments. And some of our students are living in those two-bedroom, three-bedroom apartments. He goes, and some of them are living with a full family in one bedroom, a full family in the second bedroom, yep. and potentially a full family in the living room.
Yep.
Okay, so when you think about that in a three-bedroom apartment, my refrigerator, my home, my three-bedroom home is big enough for five people.
Yeah.
And you could put enough food in there.
Yeah.
It's not big enough. And it's bigger than that apartment's refrigerator. Yeah. Yeah. It's not big enough for 15 people.
Yeah.
Right. So when I think about the pre-made meals that you have, the reality of someone who's working two jobs trying to get by, cramped into a small home with other people, figuring out whose food is whose, and all of those stresses that come into that space. If, when I'm exhausted at the end of the day and I get to go home and pull a meal out and make something fresh, they're exhausting in the day, and they're barely able to make it. You know what they need? They need a more nutritious meal than I do, right? They need a more nutritious, energy-filled, nutrition-filled meal than I do because they're drained well beyond my draining, and it's a daily slog for them. So I just love these meals because it makes me feel as though we're helping a family who is already just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
A little easier so that hopefully those kids that you talked about that kid on that playground, that kid can have an advantage because when they go to school every day, they get nutritious food, not just from the school, but when they get home from school that allows them to study and get up in the morning with some energy and go right back at it so they can break that cycle of poverty.
Let's, if I can, talk about that concept for a second again, because I think I spent 25 years driving to Beverly Hills and Newport Beach to work in Southern California. I passed homeless people on the street. I knew every side cut between Orange County and Beverly Hills because I drove there, and I drove through a lot of rough neighborhoods. You see it, but you put these blinders on as life is busy. It's hard. The world is harder now than it ever has been with everything going on in it. So it's easy to put blinders on. We hired a gentleman a couple of months ago. He moved out here from Arizona to escape really rough childhood and a rough life with his young son. He moved in with his aunt and uncle. And the minute I saw the address on his application, I knew where I lived at because it's where the Clinton Family Resource Center is in Garden Grove. It's the next street over. It's where Thomas House Shelter is. Mm-hmm. Know the neighborhood very well. And got to know him. One-bedroom apartment, 600 square feet. What is this? 300 square foot right here? I don't know, 200 square foot. Double this size. He was living with his aunt and uncle, his son, and his aunt and uncle's four kids. Mm-hmm. Eight people in one bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. He's since been able to get out on his own now. But think about just you're literally stepping over people to just, even if you want to cook something in a small apartment, the, like you said, the size of the refrigerator, the stove, all these things. We just don't realize how hard that is. And these aren't people that are made mistakes in life that did stupid things and they're paying the price. This is just the working poor amongst mm-hmm. us. Maybe the person who mows our yard or cleans a pool, or maybe the busboy at a restaurant, or the person taking the order at the McDonald's drive-thru. People that are visible in plain sight because we just don't see that. And then what you talked about, I know how stressful my life is. Mm. You know how stressful your life mm-hmm. is. I have financial concerns like most people do in California, yeah. but I'm not living in poverty. I can't imagine that added huge weight mm. on my shoulder. How do I pay my rent this month? How do I buy food for my family? Mm. How do I make sure my kids have shoes to wear? It's just, we just take that for granted so much in this country. Mm. And it's just a shame because there's, 12.5% of the American population is living in poverty and yep. doesn't know where the next meal is going to come from. In Orange County, 450-some thousand people
yeah.
are struggling. I do the math often. I don't know what number you work with because it varies, but somewhere between 420 and 450,000 people right. in Orange County struggle. Do that math times three times a day,
yeah.
three meals a day, times 365 days a year. Well, 500 million meals missing.
Missing. Yeah. And you touch on a point. I was at a community event in Laguna Woods the other day, and someone said, I don't understand this food insecurity statement. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And I said, there's very few people starving in the United States. Yeah. They're not starving, but they're hungry. And yeah. she goes, what does that mean? And I said, it's like intermittent fasting, but you actually don't actually choose
yeah.
to make the intermittent fasting, right? So in other words, I'm going to give up my lunch or my dinner because that's the way I make my food budget stretch. Yeah. Or it is, I'm going to give up my lunch, my dinner, so my child has three yeah. meals a day.
Yeah.
It's not having enough money to make your food budget go all the way, get stretched. That's where we come in. That's where you come in. You come in other places too, which are just, you talked about Thomas House, and I know yeah. you feed almost all the shelters where there's housing yeah. in the space, which makes a big difference. But let's pivot on something we're thinking about doing, and it's actually because of you. So I'm going to give you credit if it works, and I'm going to give you credit if it doesn't work. I'm going to blame it on somebody else. Blame it on myself. But when you started that culinary program, what, 2 years ago? Year and a half, 2 years ago?
Well, we've had it around forever, but during COVID, we completely reimagined it.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't say forever, but yeah, we tried a lot of different things. But during COVID 2020, we reimagined the whole thing, so we're now in our fifth class.
Okay, great. Okay, so you've been doing this for a while, but yeah. it all of a sudden it became very visible
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
And I started looking, saying, wow, that is genius. And and what I meant by genius, obviously it's genius, but
yeah.
what I meant by genius was you're building up a workforce that is highly needed, and if you do it right, you can make a good living, a good wage.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, you're making it possible for your nonprofit to accelerate the delivery of meals mm-hmm. to the community.
Yep.
So it's a beautiful twofer. Like, you're building people up and you're launching them into new careers and you're blessing them in that space. And their hands on a daily basis are making it possible for you to meet the volume of demand that you get for recovered food and putting that out. Awesome.
Thank you.
Just awesome. I pray that more and more organizations come alongside of you to do that work. And I know that there's some challenges to that,
yeah.
especially around footprint and food safety and
all
this other stuff. Yeah. We're looking at doing something similar in our grocery markets because, you know, we have that pantry, and our yeah. pantry looks like a small grocery store.
It's a beautiful pantry, by the way.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. We want it to be a scaled-down Trader yeah. Joe's, which brings so much joy.
Yeah.
We're trying to do the same thing. We're bringing people behind us to learn how to be a grocer and work in the grocery industry and logistics and to do that work. And it's because we don't have enough people, and I can't hire enough people to meet the actual demand. So I just want to applaud you. And if this goes well, Bill Bracken made this happen. If it doesn't go well, LaValle did not understand what was going on.
I don't know about Bill making it happen, but you and I should talk later offline because this is the first I've heard of this, and I have some deep connections with some grocers that educating and trying to train up future grocers is huge for them because people don't realize. I was just at Kroger's corporate office a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and people don't realize that there can be careers in a grocery store, in the grocery business. They just look at the person working at checkout, not realizing there is a career there. So yeah. I should connect you with a couple of people that could be a huge part of that.
We will let you do that. Yeah. Yeah, the code box that you don't see, the people with the deep coats on the back, packing up all the code stuff, the person behind the deli counter, the person who's preparing the produce before it comes out, the bagger and checker, the person who's doing inventory and control, driving trucks, forklifts. There's a career there, and we're going to make it happen. All right, we're approaching the end. So, Bill, we end this with some questions, right? Okay. So I hope we gave you the questions ahead of time. If we didn't, that's going to be even better.
I don't think they did, but here we go.
Beautiful.
If you did, I didn't read them, okay? I'll take the blame for that.
You're going to be able to answer these questions. It's all easy. Okay, so when you think about your life, who has influenced you most?
God.
Okay. That wasn't a surprising answer.
Reason I'm here talking to you right now. I would be remiss to not talk about all the chefs along the way, but I really feel my whole life was a journey leading right toward Bracken's Kitchen. I wish the name wasn't Bracken's Kitchen sometimes, because every time they say Bracken's, it makes me cringe. You just said Bracken's Refrigerator. I'm like, can it just be the kitchen's fridge or something?
Okay, we'll change it to BK.
We'll come up with it. There you go. Yeah. But truly, God has led me to this point in my life.
Not a surprising answer. We've had many conversations around that. So when you think about your favorite food when you're growing up as childhood, what was your favorite childhood meal or food?
My mother passed away almost 7 years ago now, and I would give anything to have her fried chicken with mashed potatoes and gravy and fresh corn just one more time.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm going to leave that alone. We share that a little bit. My mother's macaroni and cheese still to this day. My wife does a really good job of mimicking it, but it's...
My wife's health and fitness coach, so she doesn't like frying anything. I have to get out. I actually bought an old electric fryer at a antique store in Central California last summer when we was up there, because it looked just like my mom's, and I made some fried chicken in it recently.
That's awesome. All right, last question. Since around the table, I'm around the table with you. Who would you like to sit around the table with? It could be anyone. Today, gone, future. Who would you like to sit around the table with and talk?
When you said that, I immediately thought of way back before Facebook and Instagram. There was MySpace, I think is what it was called. I don't know. She's laughing over there at us. And I remember putting on there clearly the three people I would like to meet in heaven was Elvis, Johnny Cash, and my grandpa Bracken, who I never met. But there's so many people I'd love to sit around the table and talk with, whether it's in a podcast like this year. But I've always landed on Johnny Cash, because his story of pain and suffering and redemption and revival is so powerful if you know his story. And I think that's what we're talking about here. Getting people that are down here to a better place in life, and how do you fight to get to that spot? But that was a tough question for me, so I could have answered a million different ways.
I'm glad we didn't give you the answers ahead of time, because we got the best answer. Bill, hey, thanks for coming out over today. Thanks for being around the table with us. Just like I said, just a blessing and joy to be with you.
Right back at you.
I appreciate that, brother. All right, so thank you for listening, and we hope you and your friends will join us next time around the table as we continue to explore the intersection of food, people, and culture. Have a great day.
There you have it. One more reason to join us each and every time as we gather around the table and continue to talk about creative and effective ways to combat hunger and homelessness here in our community. Brought to you by South County Outreach and Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.